You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Happy Wednesday to all. Halfway to another Seahawks preseason game, and that means we're getting closer to real football on September 8th when the Seahawks host the Bengals at CenturyLink Field. I'm pumped to speak with our special guest today. Coming up in the second and third quarter, I'll be joined by Samuel Gold of The Athletic. He's an X's and O's encyclopedia, produces some of the best film breakdowns in the business. This summer, he did a Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck film breakdown that really stirred up Andrew Luck supporters, and I just thought it was outstanding work, one of the best breakdowns that I've ever seen. Can't wait to pick his brain about some observations from Sunday's preseason game in Minnesota, including the stellar play of the offensive line, the starting offensive line. Make sure I clarify that there. Before Sam joins me shortly, the Seahawks have quite the history of making trades in late August and early September. Will it happen again this year? First off, fantasy football players, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and the Locked On Fantasy Football podcast. Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering fantasy football. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else, then you are the same. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider. So since arriving in 2010, John Schneider and Pete Carroll have made it an annual tradition to swing trades during the final 2 weeks of the preseason. As originally pointed out by Field Goals, excellent research done by them, the Seahawks have made 21 trades in August, early September, before the regular season starts. In fact, Schneider has orchestrated seven trades between August 23rd and September 2nd in the last two seasons alone. Looking at last year, Seattle dealt a sixth-round pick to the Green Bay Packers for backup quarterback Brett Hundley. Certainly a questionable move. Hundley luckily didn't have to play any snaps. That's a good thing with your backup quarterback, but they gave up a sixth-rounder to acquire him, and he never played in the game. Shalom Luani is acquired from the Raiders for a seventh-round pick. And then the Seahawks made a player-for-player swap. They sent receiver Marcus Johnson to the Indianapolis Colts for tight end Darryl Daniels, who appeared in a couple games for the Seahawks and then was let go and ended up with the Cardinals. So you look at those trades, Luani's the only one of those three players that is still in Seattle, and he's fighting for a roster spot going into the 2019 season. Then in 2017, the Seahawks made some really interesting trades. Justin Coleman, this is one of the best ones that John Schneider has made this time of year. He deals a seventh-round pick to the Patriots to get Justin Coleman, and Coleman ends up becoming a full-time starter, 32 starts for the Seahawks at slot corner, signs a huge deal with the Detroit Lions back in March, so that one certainly paid off big time for the Seahawks. They acquired Sheldon Richardson in a blockbuster deal from the Jets. It ended up being a one-year rental. They gave up a second-round pick and Jermaine Kearse to acquire Richardson. Trade didn't necessarily work out for the Seahawks. They did get one decent season from Richardson before he left as a free agent. And then they dealt Cassius Marsh to the Patriots for a fifth and a seventh. That seventh round pick they actually turned around and traded back to the Patriots for Justin Coleman, interestingly. And then they dealt a conditional pick to the Chiefs for Isaiah Battle, a reserve offensive lineman. That trade didn't necessarily pan out either, but it was a conditional pick. They were just taking a chance to see what they could get out of Battle. 2016, Kevin Norwood, another fourth-round receiver that didn't necessarily pan out in Seattle. He at least lasted one season with the Seahawks, though, unlike Chris Harper in 2013. Seahawks dealt him to the Panthers for a fifth-round pick. 2015, they traded a fifth-round pick to the Kansas City Chiefs for Kelce McCray. Pretty solid backup safety that gave him a few spot starts, replacing an injured Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. 2014, another really good trade they made with the Colts. They send a sixth-rounder for Marcus Burley. Only started one game, but gave the Seahawks a lot of really good snaps as a slot corner. And probably a player they should have dressed in that Super Bowl against the Patriots. They didn't dress him, and Jeremy Lane's injury, that ended up being a huge problem for the Seahawks depth-wise in their secondary. And you can even go all the way back to 2010, the first year that Schneider was in town. Seattle traded cornerback Josh Wilson to Washington for a fifth-round pick. The Seahawks got tackle Tyler Palumbus from the Lions. So they were making trades even that first season. Obviously a ton of transactions the first couple years that John Schneider and Pete Carroll were in town. But they've been making trades like this every August and early September to try to bolster their roster, shipping guys out of town that aren't going to make the team that may have a better chance to contribute for other teams. They are consistently aggressive this time of year. So you can basically guarantee there will be trade activity from John Schneider. He's had his best luck adding slot corners and reserve safeties with all these moves that I mentioned previously, and obviously Seattle does need to add to those groups this year. It's a little different situation, but other teams have less depth there, so we could actually see a reversal from previous seasons. You could see the Seahawks trying to ship out a couple of slot corners, a couple of safeties that aren't going to make the roster, and maybe they can get something in return, a late round pick, or maybe there's another player. They could do a similar trade to that Johnson for Daniels deal they did last year, where they're bringing in a player at a position that they have a little more need. So could see some reversal there. As far as adding to this team, it's pretty obvious what position group needs to be addressed. If you were watching that game on Sunday night, can they get a decent pass rusher this time of year? One name that continually gets brought up, I'm not going to go down the Clowney pipeline today because, let's face it, the chances of that happening are very slim to none. But this is a name that keeps getting thrown out there who has past ties to Pete Carroll. And that's Everson Griffin, who was recruited to USC by Carroll, and he's played his entire NFL career for the Vikings. So the Seahawks actually got a look at him the other night. He had his contract reworked in March, and that's worth noting here. He's making $8 million this year instead of $11 million like he originally would have made when he signed his contract. He's coming off a pretty tough year. 5.5 sacks last season for the Vikings in 11 games. That was the lowest total he had had since 2013. He spent a month away from the team. He had some mental health issues last year. He allegedly threatened to shoot someone at a hotel in Minneapolis. No gun was found. He wasn't arrested. Instead, he was admitted to the hospital. It looks like he's now in a good place. They got him back at the end of the season last year. He played pretty well down the stretch for the Vikings. This is a guy that was a three-time Pro Bowler. He made three straight Pro Bowls from 2015 to 2017. 2017 was his best season in the NFL. He's just a 2 years removed from it. 13 sacks, a career high for him. So he could easily have a bounce back season at a pretty affordable price. It all comes down to compensation. What does Minnesota want in return? Are they even wanting to trade him at this point since they were able to rework his salary for this season? He's still a starter on their defensive line. They've got Danielle Hunter on the other side. They may not want to make a move here. The Vikings consider themselves to be a Super Bowl contender. They've got the talent. They've got the pieces there. So they might not want to make that move, even with Griffin coming off of a down season by his standards and obviously the bizarre incident at the hotel, all those things. He's in a good place now, so who knows if Minnesota even wants to make a move here, but this is certainly a player that John Schneider could try to call the Vikings about and just see, you know, what is it going to take? What do you guys want in return? Are you interested in moving him still? Because there were plenty of rumors out there before they reworked his contract. This is a team that has, they're in salary cap hell. They still are. The Vikings have very minimal cap space to work with, especially after extending Kyle Rudolph, their veteran tight end. They need some cap relief, but at the same time, they're in win now mode. So tough to tell if they'd actually be interested, but that certainly seems like a much more viable option for the Seahawks where they're at right now. A really good player that at 31 years old, he's maybe past his prime at this point, but could still give them some bite to their pass rush. He's over 270 pounds, so he can play that five-tech defensive end as well as the Leo spot. He's got the athleticism still to do that. You can move him all over the line, those two spots. So certainly a player that could help this defensive line, especially if Ziggy Ansah isn't able to play in week one. They need somebody that's a proven pass rusher that can really get after it and still hold up against the run. I think Griffin can still do that. All comes down to, do the Vikings want to move him? And if they do, what are they wanting in return? The Seahawks aren't going to want to give up too much. It's tough to make trades this time of year for that reason. Teams are trying to cut down their rosters from 90 to 53. But with a player like Griffin that is a proven pass rusher, and he's at $8 million, that's a pretty good deal this year. That would be something the Seahawks could certainly consider. Up next, I'll be chatting with Samuel Gold of The Athletic about his thoughts on Seattle's first two preseason games and how the starters looked in their first action on Sunday in Minnesota. You won't want to miss it. Crushing it at work, or maybe you're laser focused on beating that boss level on your latest video game? that doesn't mean you shouldn't eat. DoorDash can help you get your next meal from your favorite restaurant in minutes. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Whether you're in Seattle, LA, New York City, it doesn't matter. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local go-tos or choose your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and Chick-fil-A. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code LOCKEDON. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. We've got a guest that has forgotten more X's and O's than I know. He's one of the best film gurus out there, and he proudly upset all of the Andrew Luck apologists out there with his outstanding Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck film breakdown earlier this summer. Joining us on the phone, we've got Samuel Gold from The Athletic. Thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Corbin. I really appreciate it.
So the Seahawks, they dropped their second preseason game on Sunday night. Again, these games, the win-loss column does not matter. They fall 25-19, but it was really the first opportunity that we had to see the starting offense and the starting defense. They're still missing a few pieces out there, but namely got to see Russell Wilson for a couple of drives. And we're going to start off just looking at the first drive offensively and the first drive on the defensive side of the football. And what were your thoughts, Sam, on the way that the play calling was? Obviously, teams are kind of vanilla this time of year, but the Seahawks were pretty aggressive with their play action passing game early.
Yeah, I was honestly impressed by that. I think that's one of my bigger takeaways was the Seahawks seemed to be focused more on play action, and that was even out of shotgun, and it was play action and single back and using crossing routes to get Lockett and John Brown open. And honestly, I think that was what really impressed me the most just because it was new. I mean, in the past season, they ran on first down in 64% of the time, where this game, it was something like 80% was passing plays. And I know there's an argument to say that, you know, this Seahawks identity is the run first, but I don't know. They looked really good doing it. And yes, I do. I do know it's preseason, but I'm encouraged by what I saw. And I'm hoping for more of it, at least come next week and into the regular season.
It was really interesting watching how this played out. Wilson finished 6-for-9, 82 yards. A couple throws that he normally would have hit on, missed on. You expect that in the preseason. But as you mentioned, Jerron Brown, he was looking for him early and often. I think maybe what was the most encouraging thing in this game, and obviously, again, it's just the preseason. The Vikings were missing some players on defense, but they still had Danielle Hunter out there. They still had some other guys that can get after the quarterback. They still blitzed a fair amount. That offensive line, which Dwayne Brown has said could be one of the best in the NFL, looked pretty darn impressive. Russell Wilson was just sitting back there just buying time. I mean, you can't tell me this team can't throw the football more if they're going to be protecting like that.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I was blown away just in general by how well they protected, especially in the first two drives. Russell Wilson was protected. Dwayne Brown looked fantastic. I mean, even a guy like Ethan Posick, who, if you know anything about my work on Ethan Posick, I mean, I just don't have a ton of faith in his abilities, but he actually looked good in this game. He played something like 20 snaps, around 14 or 15 were in pass protection, and he actually looked really good. And I don't even think he allowed a single pressure during that time period, but I could be mistaken on that fact. But yeah, I mean, I think that's encouraging. I think a good part of that is that we got to see them in as close to real life action as we can. And if Ethan Posick does end up playing significant time with Mike Iupati, maybe he doesn't stay healthy or whatever reason. I mean, if he plays like he did against the Vikings, I think that's a good sign to see.
Yeah, with the depth issues they're dealing with right now. This is, and it's interesting. Rob and I had talked about this on our show a few times, that going into training camp, the Seahawks, this is the best depth that they've had along the offensive line. But now you're suddenly looking at, with Jordan Simmons being down, Phil Haynes not back yet, and they've got Mike Iupati still on the sidelines, as you mentioned. Posick could very easily be in the starting lineup at left guard in week one, which going into training camp, that probably doesn't inspire much confidence. But this is a pretty good, even for a preseason game, this is a pretty good test when you're going against Minnesota's front line. You know they're well coached, and you know they're going to get after the quarterback. And yet Russell Wilson had a ton of time pretty much every time he dropped back. I think I only listed twice, and maybe one of them was pushing it as far as pressure's concerned. He really had tons of time in the pocket, and it was just really exciting to see. Now, I'm going to break away real quick just from those first couple of drives, and obviously I know you put most of your study into that, but this is just generally something that it seems like he's kind of become the irritant of Seahawks Twitter, and that is running back Rashad Penny. I have my stance on this. I agree with Pete Carroll and his commentary the other night. I don't think there's a running back in football on most of the runs that he had in that game Sunday night that could have done anything with those. There was one he got hit 7 yards in the backfield. How concerned are you, though, moving forward with where his development is at, being a first-round pick 2 years ago and the expectations that go with that?
So the way I'd view it is that while he didn't have a ton to work with, he didn't exactly do a ton either. So the argument I got into, and as I tracked his runs, and man, I felt like there were multiple opportunities where he just didn't break any tackles. He didn't get away from anything. And yes, there you can have the argument where he was hit in the backfield. That's fair. But on that same play, his feet stopped. It was like he was expecting to get hit. And so it's what bothers me is that I feel like as physical and as strong as we all say, and for his size, and that was, you know, something he did so well at San Diego State, was that he would push the pile and that he would always chunk out, you know, an extra yard or so. That was his MO, is that once he got on his track, he could do that. And one of my biggest concerns for him coming out was backfield penetration and being able to create yards off of that. And man, what concerns me is that this is just more of proof of that he can't do that. Now, that's not saying that he's bad or that he didn't have a fair shot, because frankly speaking, like on his runs, it's the offensive line did not block well. There were multiple hits in the backfield. It was generally speaking, the first contact was at least near the line of scrimmage, or it was either near it or it was behind it. But again, I keep coming back to, there's that one play where the free safety comes down and kind of does this, you know, he does like a full jump and spins around, and then Rashad Penny gets thrown to the side as opposed to staying on his feet. I see a play like that, and I just want more. I want him to spin off of that, and I want him to keep going. But again, like even if he did that, maybe at most he gets a yard. You know what I mean? Like it's just a yard or two more. So I do agree with Pete Carroll to an extent that there wasn't a lot there. 100% agree with that. But at the same time, I also did want to see more, they're not as positive as I would hope for at this point in the preseason.
Well, the thing that's really frustrating to me, going off what you said there, is that I've been in enough practices this offseason to see that he looked like a different back compared to last year. You can tell that he's in better shape, he's leaner, more prepared, and he's made some really nice runs on the practice field and some nice catches out of the backfield. And I'm with you that there's just that, yes, there wasn't anything there, but man, you know, as talented as this guy is supposed to be, can't he make something out of that? And so, yeah, I agree with you. You'd like to see that translate more from the practice field to the game field. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to get some Sam's thoughts on the defensive side of the football, mainly going to be looking at the pass rush, which is obviously one of the biggest issues the Seahawks have to tackle going into this 2019 season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm here with Samuel Gold of The Athletic. Last quarter, we had a chance to talk about the offense and how they looked those first couple drives in Sunday's loss to the Vikings. Now we're going to swing to the defensive side of the football. And obviously, Sam, one of the biggest issues for the Seahawks going into this new season, they've got Ziggy Ansah and LG Collier on the sidelines. That certainly is impacting things. But everybody is wondering, especially with Jaron Reed being suspended those first six games, where are they going to find any semblance of a pass rush? To this point, they've had to do a lot of blitzing to be able to get after the quarterbacks these first two preseason games. What have you seen from the edge rushers against the Broncos and the Vikings?
Man, that's about all I've seen. I've seen some blitzing, and I've seen not a whole lot else in terms of pure one-on-one pass rush. And the scary part is that, I mean, okay, we can go back to the Broncos game. Jacob Martin actually looked really good. He had six total pressures. He had a sack. He had a hit. He had four hurries. And he actually looked like the semblance of somebody that we would want to see out there. And I don't know, where was he the next game? Like he had one pressure, but he also rushed the passer 14 times, and he didn't exactly make a huge impact outside of that. I feel like without Ziggy, I feel like without LJ Collier, and you know, we obviously haven't seen a ton of Collier yet, but I feel like without talent in front of us, like obvious talent, the ability to create one-on-one wins, I feel like they're going to struggle in this regard. Cassius Marshall, decent in, you know, against backups, and you know, he looked all right. And outside of that, I mean, you have a guy like Puna Ford, and maybe you have some Jaron Reed action. But again, it's I saw exactly like you said. I saw pressures through blitzing. I saw a whole not a ton else. I saw Kirk Cousins having a pretty clean pocket, and especially in the preseason when you're looking for a clear defensive win, especially because it's usually a backup offensive lineman or even it's just pass protection is just not, you know, perfected at that point or even fully planned out at that point. You're looking for more one-on-one wins, and I just didn't see that.
Yeah, the concerning thing for me, and this is kind of going off yesterday's show, Rob and I were looking at some players that are on the bubble, and we both had Barkevious Mingo on our list, certainly a player that has not been able to live up to his first-round billing, not even close. He was supposed to be a prodigious pass rusher coming into this league, and he had a really nice mock game scrimmage. I was at that scrimmage, and he had a couple really nice rushes, but a few of the other practices I've been at, just absolutely struggling to get off of blocks. And you got to wonder with how much they're going to be paying him, is he actually going to be a guy that can come in there and produce? If they're relying on somebody like that, maybe all these blitzes that we've been seeing, do you think that's maybe hinting at that's what they're going to have to do in the regular season? They're just going to have to blitz more than we've ever seen from a Pete Carroll team in Seattle?
That's a hard question, and I'm honestly leaning towards the answer of yes. I mean, even against the Broncos, Mingo actually looked decent. He was on the field for 38 snaps. He rushed the passer roughly around 30, and he had six pressures. Like that's a solid performance from a pass rusher, or at least a rotational pass rusher that you don't rely on you know, first, second, third down, that is going to be your all around guy. But that's the thing, is that we knew that from Mingo for a long time. We know that he's not a pure pass rusher, and that honestly, they're moving him there out of necessity as opposed to what they should be using him. And I believe last year he was a strong side linebacker. And frankly put, like, it's just, he's not, I never, in the past few years, I don't think he's ever really been a strong pass rusher. That's just not really him.
Yeah, it's crazy when you look at that front line right now. Just without Ziggy Ansah, without Collier. I mean, and you and I probably can agree with this. I don't think they're looking for Collier to come in and be a guy that's going to get 8 to 10 sacks for them. That's not really his game. So they're certainly in a tough spot with that group up front. They're banking, they're paying for Ansah to be that 8, 9, 10 sack guy for them that can fill in with Frank Clark being gone. But I know that right now the All 22 film's not out there. The access is certainly not there. So I don't want to delve too deep in the secondary because the observations are incomplete. But something that has jumped out to me, and something I've been able to notice with these first couple preseason games, we are seeing the Seahawks run more two deep safety looks, or at least they're disguising that with two safeties that are dropping back in coverage. With with the players they brought in, obviously you don't have Earl Thomas there anymore to be that center fielder. Marquise Blair can play free safety, but he's very comfortable near the box, just like Bradley McDougald is. Do you envision that the Seahawks are leaning more towards now having interchangeable safeties like we see a lot of teams doing in the league to give them a little bit more flexibility with the type of formations that they run?
I think they're going to try that. I think out of all the safeties, right, you have Bradley McDougald, you have Marquise Blair, you have, you know, Deshaun Shedd played some safety. It's out of all these guys, in you know, Tedrick Thomas, obviously, Delano Hill and all them, I don't think the Seahawks have a true pure free safety outside of, say, Tedrick Thompson. And just like last year, you worry about his angle of pursuit, and you just worry about, is he going to actually protect you for the deep center half of the field? And the thing is that Earl Thomas obviously leaves a huge void. He's a future Hall of Famer. Like, that's pretty much as obvious to everyone. But what I'm looking for is a serviceable, you know, B-level player just to hold a position. If you're going to play cover one, cover three system, you have to have a good free safety. And that helps everybody else on the roster. But the thing is that they just – Tedrick needs to step up if he wants to prove that. Now, if it is Bradley McDougald or, you know, Marquise Blair or somebody else, I think they will end up using a little more two-man or cover two or two high. You know, I think they could end up using more of that pattern match system just in that two high shell just because – you know, just because it might be easier on the safeties to split the field just so they don't have to cover that entire area. But, I mean, that kind of comes back to the question of, are they getting away from what Pete Carroll specializes in the cover one, cover three system? And I feel like, I don't know, it's a hard question that if you are going to run cover three a lot, or, you know, a three deep shell with four underneath, you need players overall that can execute. And just in the secondary, they just don't have that right now.
Yeah, that's certainly a big concern right now, because you're mentioning all these different things. Well, they may have to blitz more, and it's like, well, they may have to do more 2D. It just seems like they're trying to rebuild an identity here, and that's what's had to happen with retooling that secondary and the front line. I mean, they've had so much turnover there, and I guess here's my viewpoint on this. I think that this Seahawks team obviously is going to be competitive. You've got Russell Wilson under center. I think the offense is maybe going to be the strong point, but you know, you want to give Pete Carroll and his staff the benefit of the doubt. They'll find a place to put guys and find success. It just may not be the style that we've been accustomed to, as you mentioned, with having more two deep sets. They may have to get after the quarterback more. They might have more sets where they're bringing in players like Shaquem Griffin, trying to generate pressure from different spots. It's going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out.
So, yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I think it's an offensive team, and well, that sounds so weird to say that out loud, but if you're going to
really does
$35 million into Russell Wilson's hands, it better be an offensive team. So
yeah, if you're going to pay your quarterback like that, you better have weapons around him. And obviously, they invested that in the draft. They brought guys in, and unfortunately, DK Metcalf's now going to have surgery. Who knows? He's going to be available in week one. But they've brought in some pieces around him. It's a different era of Seahawks football. They still have a chance to be really good. It just might not be the same style as what fans are accustomed to. But anyway, Sam, as always, great insight on both sides of the football. Looking forward to having you back at some point in the regular season when we get to real football and all 22 is back, and we can get some even deeper insight on the way things are shaking out on both sides of the football. Hopefully, it'll be after a Seahawks win. Going to be an exciting season. Where can everybody find your work?
They can find me on Twitter at Samuel R. Gold, and also on The Athletic. I write for the Seahawks side on that.
It's been a really good first full year for The Athletic. The numbers are just through the roof. I had a chance to see all that stuff. So you're certainly part of a really exciting change in sports journalism. So make sure, listeners, that you guys are subscribing to The Athletic. We love to help out competitors as well. Sam does great work. All the guys at The Athletic do. So make sure you get a subscription. And make sure to occasionally still read our stuff as well, but The Athletic has really good stuff. Again, Sam, greatly appreciate having you on board.
Of course, all the time. Thank you for having me. I'll definitely come on during the season.
Special thanks to Samuel Gold for joining the show. As always, superb analysis on the state of the Seahawks on both sides of the football. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, contact me at LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Just visit our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com, and you could subscribe to any of those platforms there. Coming up on Thursday's show, Rob Rang and I will be making our latest 53-man roster projections. You will not want to miss this show. It's going to be awesome. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.